Masahiro, first question.
Say something.
You only went 24-0 last year. Was that very disappointing that you only won 24 games?
27試合投げて24勝だったんで、あと3勝できました。
Actually, I was disappointed. I threw 27 games and I was 24-0, so probably could have won 3 more games.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Alley podcast, where we're pretty pleased that the Yankees have just swept the first place Blue Jays. I didn't really envision saying first place Blue Jays going into the season, but hey, that's what 2014 has brought us. And the Yankees took care of business and are now only a game and a half behind Toronto in the AL East. I'm Andrew Mearns, joined by Matt Ferencik and Matt Provenzano. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good, especially after the win.
Yes, David Phelps is quite good, just like he was against the A's. So he's had a pretty good week, and obviously Masahiro Tanaka did his usual Tanaka thing, and Chase Whitley was okay. So the Yankees managed to get through this Blue Jays series against a tough offense in Yankee Stadium with a relatively minimal damage, save for that one Edwin Encarnacion monster bomb off Sean Kelly.
But I think that's one of those moments where you just tip your cap to Edwin Encarnacion being a monster.
Right, and Sean Kelly also is... I mean, he was also just trying to throw strikes in, like, a four-run game, and I'd rather be trying to throw strikes than, like, nibbling, and, you know, sometimes Edwin Encarnacion is just going to do that.
Yeah. Especially where that pitch was.
Yeah.
It was right down the middle.
But otherwise Yankees was fine. Bullpen was pretty great. It's, Dallin Conte, David Robertson, Adam Warren, all pitching in, and all getting their share of strikeouts, just because that's what they've been doing in 2014.
Yeah, I think I read something that Warren, Robertson, and Betances have, I believe, 36% of all the strikeouts for the Yankees.
Yeah, I'd believe that.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah. I believe that, because the only guy on their staff that really gets a lot of strikeouts is Tanaka. Kuroda's not really a big strikeout guy. Sometimes Phelps can get him, but for the most part, it's Tanaka and those three guys.
Yeah. Wade LeBlanc doesn't have that many.
No. Neither did Dean Anna.
Neither does.
Nope.
Or Bruce Billings and Chris LaRue.
Never forget, except I probably will.
I'd also like to say I'm pretty excited that we're beginning the David Huff experience once again.
Hasn't that already begun? I thought he pitched the other day.
Just in the random.
And I'm loving it. I'm loving it all.
Yeah. Well, as long as David Huff is pitching in long relief, it's whatever. I think I actually trust him in long relief more than Alfredo Aceves. But he's kind of a scary, crazy person. And Wade LeBlanc is just awful.
Yeah.
But the one Yankee starter who hasn't been pitching well.
Yeah, I'm not upset Wade is gone.
Yeah. The one Yankee starter who has not been pitching well is Vidal Nuño, and he really hasn't pitched well in quite some time. So his ERA is up around 5.9. He got bombed by the A's in his last appearance, and that was even in Oakland. But I know the A's have a good offense, but it's hard to justify the Yankees continuing to try him out there. I mean, I know there are not many alternatives right now because AAA is offering basically nothing, but you got to figure they could do at least something.
Yeah. I think anyone as a spot starter, really. I mean, at this point, I mean, he's like pretty much exactly replacement level or below, depending on which measure you use, so you can't really do much worse.
Yeah, I mean, I know Warren's been good in the bullpen, but I wrote an article the other day about how I think Warren should be shifted to the rotation, because I think he'd just be more useful there at this point.
Yeah, he's not going to give you a 5.9 ERA, I don't think.
No, and I don't think it'd take too long to get him stretched out either, because he often goes multiple innings. I mean, I know he's been effective in shorter stints, but, you know, that's just natural for any starter that's put into a relief role. I mean, just look at Wade Davis.
Well, I mean, I guess the only argument is that, like, is he actually going to be more valuable in a starting rotation role? Because Warren has already produced, like, one WAR in the 40 innings he's pitched. And if he pitches, you know, 80 innings, he'll basically produce like 2 wins as a relief pitcher. I don't know if he would have produced that as a starter. So are you really getting the equivalent value per inning if you throw him out there for 5 innings, or you get the same if you threw him out there for once, 1 inning every couple of days?
Maybe, but I don't know. It's, with relievers, that can just vary so much that
I wouldn't exactly be putting
all my stock into that. I think that it would just be more useful for the Yankees to not have to have an almost automatic loss every 5th day. Because Nuno's been putting them in such a hole that, well, the offense has been doing a little bit better. It's not, I don't really think that it's fair to really expect them to be like, all right, it's Nuno day, you better score 6 runs or you're going to lose.
And even last time, 6 runs wouldn't have been good enough.
That's right, because the A's eventually put on 10.
Well, and they got 8 off Nuno.
Yeah, they got 8 off Nuno. His ERA is now like 31% worse than the league averages or something like that. And the unfortunate thing is that aside from Warren, there's just not really much that they could theoretically do to replace Nuno at this point. Except Hopper is back to have a good recovery, but he's not going to be back for 6 weeks at the earliest.
And there's really no AAA depth that would be useful at all.
Yeah, Shane Green's been pitching terribly in Scranton. And everyone else is just, Joel De La Cruz?
Bruce Billings.
Yeah, Bruce Billings.
Bruce Billings to Electric Boogaloo.
Run. Jeremy Blake. It is not a pretty scene in starting rotations in Scranton and Trenton, but alas.
Well, Blake's name is close enough to Bleck to make, like, Bleck to make its puns.
Exactly. Can we turn that down? Maybe they'll claim Randy Wolf.
Do it. And unfortunately, the Marlins claim Brad Hand, so...
I thought that was Brad Penny.
And Brad, both of them. Brad Hand and Brad Penny.
Oh, so I see Brad's the new... All the Brads. Brad's the new market inefficiency. Yeah. The extra 2% with Brad. Yeah, so... Yankees just don't really have much to turn to, Nuno. My solution would be shift Warren into the rotation. What would you guys propose?
Of all the current options, that's the best one. But I wouldn't be opposed to trying to find someone, even if they're crappy off this draft, Peep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really like it. I don't like moving Warren. But you're at the point where it's like you don't have much of a choice. You're hoping that you only really have to deal with, I don't know, not more than 5 more Nuno starts.
Mm-hmm.
But those 5 starts could be bad.
Yeah, I mean, his next start is scheduled to be at Yankee Stadium against the Orioles, Nelson Cruz and Chris Davis. And then his next scheduled start after that would be against the Red Sox. So...
27.
Yeah, so.
So back-to-back no-hitters. Watch out, John Vandermeer.
That Red Sox start, is that the 27?
I believe so. Yeah, I just heard that his next scheduled start would probably be... He's going to start, I believe, on Saturday against the Orioles, and then his next scheduled start would be next Friday, unless they skipped him. Which I guess they could.
They better skip him, because I have to deal with a Nuno start my birthday.
No!
And not going to be happy.
Worst birthday present. Happy birthday. I gave you dingers. I guess in contrast to Vidal Nuno, Masahiro Tanaka, he is kind of good at this baseball thing. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
I think he's got it down pat.
Yeah. His whip is still under 1 at .953. He's striking out 10.2 batters per 9 innings. He's fanned 113 in 99 and 2/3. For those who enjoy wins, he's at 11-1, and his ERA is 1.99 with a 2.70 FIP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did a little research on Yankee starters since 1920. And if he were to continue at the pace that he's pitching at, he would finish with the fifth best pitching season in Yankee history by both RA9 WAR and F WAR. So, pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good pace to have. Who would be the starters that were ahead of him? Was that Guidry 78? Who else?
That would be number one for. So I can give both. For F WAR, it goes Guidry in 78, Lefty Gomez in 1937, yep. Andy Pettit in 1997,
yeah.
And then Mike Mussina in 2001.
Yeah, Andy Pettit was quietly excellent in 1997, but no one really noticed because he didn't have as many wins as the year before.
Yeah, exactly. If you go by RA9 WAR, you would get again, Guidry. In 1978, you get Lefty Gomez again, 1937. You would then get Lefty Gomez, 1934, and then you would get Catfish Hunter in 1975.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me too much. So those two seasons by Lefty Gomez, he won the pitching triple crown in both seasons, and he would just rocked everybody. And the 1975 season by Catfish Hunter was when he was first brought over as a free agent, and Billy Martin rode him into the ground with like 300 innings or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, so I'll look how many innings he had that year. In 1975, he had 328 innings.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And, of course, you mentioned before 2001 Mike Mussina, which I loved watching. He deserved that Cy Young Award much more than Roger Clemens did.
Oh, yeah. Mike Mussina was a monster.
That was the year he had the near-perfect game.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Stupid Carl Everett. You and your non-believing dinosaurs.
That year, he had a 3.15 ERA, a 2.92 FIP in 228 innings. He went 17-11. Struck at 8.42 per nine and walked 1.65 per nine.
Doesn't suck.
So he was pretty good. So this is the type of company that Tanaka's pitching in Yankee was, and that's not bad.
Tanaka's only walking 1.4 per nine. He just doesn't walk people, really. And whenever he does, he just gets pissed off at himself. Or any time he gives up a home run, which... That has been his one problem. He does give up some homers, but anytime he does, he like strikes out the side, it seems like.
He gets mad. He gets mad for allowing a home run when he decides to strike out everybody.
Like when he gave up the home run to Cano in Seattle, and then he's just like, all right, screw this. I'm just ending this game. I lost my shutout, but still.
Well, you can clearly see like he's still adjusting to the fact that those pitches are going to be home runs in the United States. Like, in Japan, that could be a pop-up.
Yeah.
And I think he's starting to realize that he really cannot make those type of mistakes. Even though his home run rate isn't terrible.
Right.
It's below 1 per 9, so it's not horrible. But I think he's realizing you can't throw a sinker right down the middle.
Right.
Because I think that hitters are sitting first-pitch sinker.
But yes, he has struck out everybody.
Yeah, 10.2 per nine.
He's reached double digits in strikeouts 5 times already. He struck out 11 in 2 of them.
And I always love after the game when he criticizes himself. And the last game, he threw 6 innings and struck out 10, and he said that he didn't have his best stuff and he like wasn't happy with himself. So,
or when he's like, I feel that I've gotten off to an okay start.
So I think he's going to have a game where he strikes out 27 in a row, and he's going to be like, yeah, I think I did all right there.
Masahiro, you just won World Series MVP. How does it feel? Meh, it's okay.
I wish I could have done better.
Tanaka, you won the Rookie of the Year, the Cy Young Award, and the MVP. What do you think of your season? Well, I mean, there was that one loss.
I should have got Gold Glove.
Should have gotten a Silver Slugger. But they don't award that in the American League. Still should have. You were voted Sportsman of the Year. Eh.
You are now the President of the United States, must I hear, bro.
Could have done it better.
Why am I not Prime Minister? Why have I not been so influential that I overhauled the government? But, yeah, we're all great fans of Tanaka. Hopefully it will continue, but it's been pretty damn fun so far.
Yeah, I'm just going to enjoy it while I can, because I don't know if it's going to continue forever, but I'm just going to enjoy it while, as long as it lasts.
I predict that it will last forever. He will go to the Hall of Fame with a 1.99 ERA. And he'll be like, you know, it should have been below one. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah, I cannot accept this.
he gets voted to the Hall of Fame, and he declines to attend because he didn't think he deserved it.
I could have pitched better.
I should have been better, so they let me in while I was still playing.
The funny thing is if he knows in his head that there's a certain level of performance that he knows is his peak, and he's basically saying, no, that's not my peak. What is his peak then? What is it? Striking out everybody?
I guess so.
I'm just curious. Like, I'm curious at what point does he reach, I'm now satisfied with the way I'm pitching.
I'm trying to remember how he reacted after he shut out the Mets, because he only led 4 hits. No runs.
I would have to go back, because I know there is an account that translates his Twitter. But I think, if I recall, he basically just said he was happy to get the win. Mm-hmm. I think that's all he said. But I do remember correctly that when he threw that game against the Cubs, pitched a game against the Cubs where I think it was the complete game, where he only allowed, I think it was like 2 bunt singles, he said after the game that he made a number of mistakes and he wanted to adjust himself.
The one against the Cubs is the one he lost.
No, I'm talking about the first one.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah. He went 8 innings and allowed 2 hits, no runs, walked 1.
Yeah, that's right. And he said that he wasn't satisfied.
He struck out
10.
Probably because of the 1 walk. He's like, God, it was the worst. Oh, no, I found his comments after the Mets game. That was when he said, it's too early to say that I'm successful here. Obviously, I have a 7-year contract, and I want to be able to be a good pitcher throughout those years. Basically, I'm just going to try to keep on going, get the results, and be as reliable as I can. He doesn't care.
He is adorable.
I guess that was just his go-to comments after, like, well, I can't say that I need to work on anything, so I'll just diminish that small sample size shit. Actually, that'd be
Tanaka's
really funny if they, like, interviewed him after the game. He's like, Tanaka, you threw a no-hitter. What do you think? Small sample size. Whatever.
I want to die.
It was random statistical variation.
What would he have said if he, like, threw Kershaw's game? I shouldn't have let him get the error.
I wish I could have run over to the shortstop and made the play myself.
Just deviating a little bit, but I heard in post-game Kershaw said, like, you know, that probably could have been scored a hit, but given the circumstances. And I was like, no, you're just being kind, Clayton. That was a terrible throw.
Yeah.
Hanley should be buying something for Kershaw. I don't know what, but something.
Yeah. God. Again, I'm still deviating onto this topic. That was a freaking incredible game by Clayton Kershaw. I'm not even sure if we'll ever see a better pitched game. Because it was better than some perfect games.
Yeah, it was. But I think I said this before. The only game score that was ever higher than that game since 1914 was Kerry Wood striking out 20. Yeah. This is in a nine-inning game.
Yeah.
So it's one of the best pitch games ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it above. I know game score does, but I wouldn't put it above all perfect games. But I'd put it above some of them because some of the perfect games have been recipients of great defense. But some of them, like Felix Hernandez, was just ridiculous against the Rays. I don't think there were any good plays or any like much needed like great defensive plays. Same thing with David Wells. Don Larson only had a couple, but yeah, Clayton Kershaw was ridiculous. Well, and he struck out 15.
It was Burley's.
Yeah, Mark Burley was bailed out by Dwayne
Wise. Dwayne Wise catch.
So I have a question regarding that. What's your opinion on now we're going into the age where the shift is obviously ubiquitous. What is your opinion on now you're going to see more, you're obviously going to see perfect games where they're going to be hits taken away by the shift. Do you think that all diminishes it? Or, I mean, it's still a great feat, but do you think it diminishes it at all?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I still don't. I don't think so.
I'm just curious.
Because he could still make the argument that he's sort of pitching so that the batters have been more inclined to hit it into the shift as opposed to
I agree with you.
I mean, obviously the pitcher can't control everything about, like, where a batter hits it, but he can try.
Someone bunted it down the line to break up a perfect game with a shift on. How big is the fight?
Oh, God. There was already, like, anytime someone tries to bunt during, like, a no-hitter or a perfect game, people get pissy anyway, and that's without the shift.
Yeah.
Like, when Jim Abbott threw a no-hitter, Kenny Lofton, like, tried to bunt in the ninth inning, and people got even more annoyed about that because, you know, Jim Abbott had, like, he only had the one arm. But, and then also, I think it was 2000 or 2001, Curt Schilling had, like, a no-hitter into the ninth inning, and he lost it when someone beat out a bunt single. So, I'm sure that there would be a bunch of people that were like, no!
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Kershaw, I would totally see him being angry just because it was 8-0. But if it's if you're down by fewer than three runs or fewer, I don't see how that's a big deal at all.
Oh yeah, I personally don't have a problem with it in general. Yeah.
And actually I don't think that Kershaw himself would even, he doesn't seem like the guy that would be too pissy about it. Maybe like some of his teammates
probably
would,
not.
But I could see some pitchers being like, no.
Oh, yeah.
The Brian McCann version of a pitcher.
Well, I'm curious. I'll have to look this up.
Yes.
But the thing is I believe his contract has incentives baked in for those type of things. For, like, no hitters.
Interesting.
I mean, that's possible. I'm not sure. So I'd have to look that up, but I do know that certain contracts have incentives based on things like no hitters or things like that.
All right.
So maybe sometimes they do have a vested interest.
Well, I think we can move on from that now. There wasn't too much news over the past week, but one of the moves Yankees made was to activate Francisco Cervelli and send down John Ryan Murphy. Well, that was a bit of a bummer since Murphy was a lot of fun to watch when he was backing up McCann. Just because the Yankees don't typically have many good young position players, but at the same time, I think it was a move they had to make because otherwise they would have had to just cut Cervelli entirely to keep Murphy or run with three catchers.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean. And at least Murphy gets to play every day in AAA, which I think isn't a bad thing at all. I mean, he is major league ready. It's not like he needs more development, but just getting the everyday time, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah. Cervelli's been a fine backup in the past. There's no reason to just cut him, because if, you know, if you decide to do that and then Murphy gets hurt, then you're stuck with Austin Romine as your back catcher, and you don't want to deal with that. So, yeah, just keep Cervelli. I'll probably get hurt again. So,
yeah,
whatever.
Yep.
Yep. Now, there have been some trade rumors regarding Murphy, because scouts immediately were reportedly calling Cashman after they sent him down. Would you be willing to give Murphy up for... Or maybe I shouldn't ask that, because obviously any player can be had for the right cost, but what kind of player would you seek in return for Murphy?
I don't think the Yankees are going to get anything for just Murphy. And if they do, it's going to be somebody that's older and have to eat his salary. Sort of like an Ichiro Suzuki type of trade.
Yeah, or the
because there's no way the Yankees are going to get a major league ready player with a low cost. Yeah, it's going to be something like that if it's straight up. If not, he would just be part of a package where it'd be him and maybe someone like, I don't know, like Severino or someone like that. And they would be packaged together for someone who's a major league ready player who may be cost controlled, for all we know. I really don't know what they're thinking. I obviously we hear about starting pitching, but it really could be anybody. Whatever they feel is going to give them value. I mean, I'd be okay with them trading for really anything, because if they're going to get immediate return, it's better than having the return on investment that would be Murphy sitting on the street, because that's really what he's doing. He's a major league ready player that's not going to be playing every day. And McCann could get hurt, but it's a risk. But do you risk that and just have him sit on the bench when if McCann doesn't get hurt?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can. I don't know if you want to bet on someone getting hurt.
Right.
I think it's easier to bet on someone not getting hurt.
And the Yankees are working from a unique vantage point, since Murphy isn't the only catching prospect they have. They have Sanchez down in AA. There's some other younger guns far down the system, but some still interesting names like Luis Torin. And you know, it's not like it would be the end of the world. I think at this point, I would be more inclined to try to trade Sanchez than Murphy, but that's just me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sanchez is he does have the higher ceiling, but at the same time, the Yankees certainly have questions about his floor, about his makeup, and also the fact is the present value of Murphy is higher than the present value of Sanchez. Sanchez gives you nothing today.
Yeah, people will just be trading off potential for there.
Exactly. So you're trading off future return on investment. Well, Murphy is an immediate return on investment.
Right. Murphy is an immediate return on investment. Sanchez, you have to just kind of gamble on a little bit. I mean, sometimes it works.
And the other thing is if... Yeah, it does. I mean, it can. I was just reading today about how the Giants traded away Zach Wheeler for a rental of Carlos Beltran. And they got the immediate return investment in Beltran, but they also traded away Zach Wheeler. And for them, it didn't really work out because they didn't sign Carlos Beltran.
Right.
And they didn't make the playoffs that year. So sometimes it doesn't work out. But all the thing you have to consider is that if Gary Sanchez were to be traded, it would have to be a bigger package because he's not going to carry that immediate value. It would have to be a package of something like Sanchez, Severino, maybe O'Brien, someone like that. Possibly Refsnyder or someone like that, who I don't think the Yankees are going to deal. But again, it would have to be a bigger package if Sanchez is involved, just because he's going to take longer to develop and he's a work in progress.
It'll be interesting to see what the Yankees do as trade season heats up. I'm sure we'll talk about it more on the podcast. I think I'll do it for topics. And Matt F. has a game for us to do this week with the minor league team names. So I'll let Matt F. take it.
Yes. Yes, if you recall a few weeks ago, I created a game where these two have to guess whether minor league team name is fake or real, and I brought that back. So we will start with Matt P. and the Rochester Hop Bitters.
That sounds fake.
No, they're real. They played in the Eastern Association.
What year, you know?
It's like 1890s.
Now, is this like, is this bitters like with alcohol, or is this bitters like I bid on this?
B-I-T-T-E-R-S. So, I don't know.
So, yeah, that's like the accompaniment to like alcohol. Bitters. Great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go Hop Bitters.
That was probably actually a very controversial name.
Okay.
Considering that was when the Prohibition movement was starting to be popular.
Yes, but I mean the Brewers were around then too, in some minor league form.
That's true.
Okay, we will go on to the next one for Andrew. The Springfield Ponies.
Doesn't seem that complex, but it could also be a trick. I'll say it's fake.
They are also real. Oh. They played in the Connecticut State League.
Of course.
Yeah, I've heard of them before. I've heard of them.
I'm surprised they don't play in the Pony League.
The league they played in has some other fantastic names that I will save if we ever do this again. But, yeah, the Connecticut State League is rife with good names.
Excellent.
Okay, third one for Matt. Let's go with the Licking County Lickers.
Ugh. That sounds fake. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fake. I found a place called Licking County, Ohio. I thought maybe I could sneak that one past.
Licking County Licks?
Yep.
You know, I mean, it sounds like
something. Yeah, I wasn't sure which part was fake. Yeah, I thought Licking County was made up. That's the part I thought was made up.
That's a real place, but
should have gone with the Licky.
As far as I can tell, they have not had a minor league team. Okay. Next one for Andrew. The Walla 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 Wallas.
Oh, I think that's real.
Yeah, they're real.
Yeah, I think that's real.
They played in the Pacific Interstate League.
Walla Walla, Washington.
They played in the same league as one of the names you did last time, the Baker City Bunchgrassers.
Well, of course.
That must be a mouthful for like a PA announcer.
It's time for Walla 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 Walla's baseball.
And now saying for the Walla Wallas. Walla 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 Walla.
I think I saw when it's unfortunately we're doing this a couple days after Tony Gwynn passed, but one of the minor league teams he played for was the Walla Walla Padres.
Nice. Was that the team that he hit like 460 with in like 20 games?
No, that was the same year though. He hit in 42 games. He hit 331, 406, 612.
Yeah, it was on the Amarillo Gold Sox, which is just amusing because Amarillo I think means yellow in Spanish. But in the Texas League, he hit 462,
yeah.
490, 725, and 23 games.
My God.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Anyway, brief Tony Gwynn detour. Continue.
Okay, for Matt, the next one. Yeah. Pendleton Ho-Hos.
That sounds real.
Yeah, they're also of the Pacific Interstate League. That league had three fantastic names.
Is that also like the 1890s?
Yeah. The specific year I looked them up is from 1891. Okay, for Andrew. Next team, the Karnes City Gremlins.
We'll say they're real.
They're not. It's kind of a trick, because that's the name of the high school's... They're in Pennsylvania, that's the name of the high school mascot.
Oh, bastards.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay. For Matt. Is there a team from Belgium, Wisconsin, called the Belgium Waffles?
I'm going to go with real.
No, they're fake. That's a real place, but the team is unfortunately not real.
Oh.
I feel like they should be a team now.
Oh, yeah. I know someone would be late.
If the Montgomery Biscuits are... If the Montgomery Biscuits can be a thing, the Belgium Waffles can be a thing.
Oh, yes.
What they should be is they should be in the same league as, what is it, the Iron Pigs?
Oh, the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
And they should... Yeah, they should be in the same league as the, I think that's the, what is it, the International League?
International League.
And
then
they should have
an International League.
Yeah, they should play in the International League, the Belgium Waffles, and then they can have the Battle of the Breakfast. It's just bacon against waffles. And then they can, like, maybe come up with a team that's, like, pancakes, and then have another team that's, like, eggs, and then have a tournament of breakfast.
Well, the Biscuits can play in that league, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
Biscuit for breakfast.
You can have the Transylvania Count Chocolates.
Okay, the final one I have is for Andrew, the Fairmont Baddies.
I'll say that's real.
Yeah, they play in the Pennsylvania West Virginia League in the late 1900s.
Ah, they're playing the baddies this week. I'm just envisioning a team that's like dressed like Western robbers or something like that. Everyone looks like Yosemite Sam.
Like little kids.
Yeah. So was that the last one?
Yeah, that's all I have.
Okay.
For now.
I think I got two right? Yeah.
I forgot to keep track.
Okay, did you read eight?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, whatever. That was still amusing. I'm very glad the Walla 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 Wallas are a thing.
Yeah, and I'm hoping the Belgium Waffles will become a thing.
One day. When we all become wealthy off our sweet blogger coin... We will rise up and found the Belgium Waffle.
Yeah. When the podcast gets picked up, we'll buy a minority team together.
Yes.
A sweet blogger coin is only redeemable in minor league baseball teams.
Yes.
Like bitcoins.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, we can move on now to the tweet bag. We don't have too many questions this week, but got a few. Our first question on Twitter from Alec Gilfillan. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. At AD Gilfillan. Any chance the Yanks don't trade a catcher? It's not a bad thing to have depth at a position like that.
If they don't, it's not because they don't want to.
Right. I'm sure they're looking into it.
I think that they're... The only reason they wouldn't is because another team doesn't bite, not because they're not trying to. I think they really do want to move one. Because with so many pressing needs, there's no reason to have a surplus of anything, really. Or too much of a surplus.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, I'm sure they don't want to, like, give him away either. So.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I think there's a chance that they'll just end up keeping all of them, but I think the odds are that someone will go by July 31st.
Yep.
But it wouldn't be the end of the world if they don't.
And it probably won't be decided until the day of.
Right.
Because a lot of these deals are done at, like, right before midnight.
Yep. Or right before, like, 4 p.m. Because I think that's when the trade deadline is.
Whatever. Yeah. Oh, that's the deadline is? Yeah, most of them are right before the deadline. because that's when teams start getting desperate.
Yep.
So I wouldn't be surprised. Something may not materialize until 3:55.
Right.
And right now, all the team is really doing is just doing prep work.
Okay.
Yep.
Next question from Blanky. A few questions. One, what is your opinion on some people thinking Tanaka shouldn't get AL Rookie of the Year purely because he pitched previously in Japan? I think that's silly. I think it...
Yeah.
That being said, I also think it's silly. I think if they want to, like, have a higher ground about, like, who's truly a rookie, then they need to define that in the rules about, like, no one who played in, like, the highest professional level in another country can be eligible. So that way, maybe you wouldn't see guys like Puig or Tanaka or, I guess those are the only two leagues I can think of, but, you would have to establish that in the Rookie of the Year rules. But since it's not established, then yeah, people should be voting for him. They didn't have a problem voting for Ichiro in 2001.
Yeah. And I want to know, of the people who don't think that Snatcher should be given Rookie of the Year because he pitched in Japan, how many of those people also thought the big deal mad of Ichiro's combined hit total from last year was overblown or not a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of those people also thought that, oh, well, Tanaka has never pitched in the major league, so he's not really proven. Then when he comes over and he's proven, then they say, oh, well, you know, he's also pitched in Japan. Okay, well, you can't use both of those arguments. They kind of contradict each other.
Yeah,
right. That's another problem.
It's either a professional league or it's not a professional league. And like you said, even if it is, does that, it means a rookie, means your first year in Major League Baseball.
Yep. Okay, next question. Also from Blanky. Do you think the Blue Jays are a team to watch for the rest of the season, or we're just on a hot run?
A little bit of both, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I would say as well. Just because
they're not a bad team, then they're a pretty good team.
Yeah, they're not the team that
but
went,
that
like,
hot
ridiculous
run certainly
in
helps.
May, but they're fine.
Yeah, basically what it is they what's good is or bad for the Yankees is that month can't be erased. They're not going to play bad to make up for their good month. So it's like they're still the same talent level team that they were before their hot streak, and now they're just playing on top of that. Sort of like the Brewers. The Brewers were really hot for a month, and they've played mediocre, but they're still good because they're just playing on top of that streak.
Right. There was one season, I think it was 2008, when the Diamondbacks went, like, something ridiculous in April and, like, the beginning of May, and then they were, like, dreadful for the rest of the year, but they almost made the playoffs anyway just because they started off so well. Like, once those wins and losses are on your record, they don't go anywhere, so you can play kind of mediocre and still be have that on your record, you'll be fine.
Exactly.
Or not, maybe not fine, but in good shape. So,
people seem to think that when you go on a hot streak, it implies something about your talent level, but in fact, it usually just means the talent level is the same, you just happen to play really well.
Right.
And then now you're playing with those wins banked with that current talent level. So it helps them because it basically helps them play above, not above their talent level, but gives them a boost.
Yep.
For a team that's not a team that's probably a 500 team.
Even if they play 500 the rest of the way, they'd win 85 games, which,
yep,
I don't know, with the AL East the way it is, that might be good enough for second.
Yeah, it's not clean right now.
Well, yeah.
But I think, and we were guilty of this on the site too, but people around baseball kind of overlooked the Blue Jays just because of how bad they were last year. But going into 2013, people thought they would be pretty good. So maybe this is just some of that actually finally coming to fruition. So I think they'll hang in there because, again, as you said, the AL East is not going to be very No one's really going to run away with this division, I don't think. So I think the Orioles, Red Sox, Yankees, yeah. and Jays will just all be fighting it out the rest of the year.
What hurt them in terms of their preseason projections is a lot of those projections had injuries baked in, and injuries basically destroyed them last year.
Right.
So if you have that sort of baked in, all the projection systems are assuming that there are going to be injuries, and when there aren't, the team is just going to be better naturally.
Right.
So that's one of the biggest if with the team is, oh, can they stay healthy? And when they do, they're incredibly good. But that also means there's going forward, you have to assume there are going to be some injuries.
Yep.
Considering they have happened in the past.
Yeah. Okay. Next question, also from Blanky. That's her last question. Was last night's game the beginning of McCann finding his swing / timing at the plate? Or was it just one game of hot hitting that will be met with a cold bat again? Now, this is referring to Wednesday night's game when McCann broke out with a triple and a homer. I mean, it's hard to say. I think there's a good chance he's going to take off at some point just because he's a much better hitter than he's played so far. And his game, no one thought that his game would go to hell overnight, so it just seems very unlikely that he would play like a whatever. I think he was like at a 70 WRC plus going into that game. I don't think anyone thought he would just continue playing like that for the rest of the season. So he'll get off on a hot streak at some point, and maybe that is the beginning of it.
Yeah,
McCann is doomed.
I generally agree with that. I think it's more like, and I wrote about this for today's column and. If you read Mitchell Lichtman's post about projection systems, people take the recent stats, and I guess it works pretty heavily when you have a player who's only been on your favorite team for one season. You're weighting their recent stats incredibly heavily. But if you weigh them against, you know, his other many years on the Braves, it looks more like a small sample or a random variation. And it's more like you want to assume that every at-bat going forward is what he would look like, you know, if you were to project him forward. Not he's going to be 80 WRC plus tomorrow. He's going to be whatever he should be tomorrow, whatever that true talent level is. So I think that's a better way to look at it than he's playing poorly because he is poor. It's he's playing poorly because any good player can play poorly for a period of time.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it just inevitably happens at some point or another, so I'm not too concerned about it. He went hitless tonight, Thursday night, but he also had two walks in there, and his last at-bat, he hit a line drive very similar to the triple he hit last night, so or Wednesday night. Yeah. So I'm hopeful that he'll be able to figure himself out. I think he will. Okay. Next question. From Yankees 199, he also has a few questions grouped into his comment. Where do Tanaka's first 14 starts rank among the first 14 starts of all pitchers in the modern era? Now, to answer this question, we tried to configure Play Index, Baseball Reference, to sort of give us an idea of the first 14 starts. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a feature on there where we can look specifically at a player's first 14 starts, at everyone's in just selected 14 starts and compare all their ERA pluses, but Matt Provenzano and I were able to narrow down some guys who'd be pretty close to Tanaka's start. You can name some of them, Matt.
Sure. Second. So I looked at a handful. There was Zach Duke in 2005. He had an ERA plus of 233. You had Cal Eldred. He had an ERA plus of 217 in 1992. I believe Francisco Liriano also had a high. I know he also had relief appearances, but he also had an ERA plus of 208. Trying to think who the other ones were. Did you have them as well?
Steve Rogers.
Steve Rogers, that's right.
Yeah, Steve Rogers at the Expos in 1973. He had a pretty terrific ERA.
2.45.
Yeah. And to break it down further, I was looking at some of these guys, how they started, specifically their first 14 starts, because actually with Eldred and Liriano, they appeared in a few games the season before, so that was just their rookie season where they had those first 14 starts really solid, but they had previous starts in previous seasons that just didn't count toward rookie status. But in Steve Rogers' first 14 games started with the Expos in 73, he pitched to a 1.31 ERA. Which is pretty tremendous. Zach Duke, as Matt mentioned, in 2005 was excellent with a 1.81 ERA with the Pirates, and that was his full season. It was good enough that he even earned some downvotes in Rookie of the Year voting, even though he only made 14 starts. But talking to that guy, he's kind of faded from memory. Mark Fidrich was another guy who didn't exactly appear on the list, but I looked individually at his first 14 starts, and he had a 1.95 ERA. This is back in 1976 when he was a sensation, and everyone was gathering around. He made the All-Star team, and he pitched to a 1.95 ERA in his first 14 starts, and that was pretty excellent. But it just was really amusing to me looking back about how many innings he threw in all these starts. It's such a different time for almost 40 years ago now, where he went at least 9 innings in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of those 14 starts, including he went 11 innings in 3 of them. So maybe it shouldn't be so surprising that he blew his arm out. But anyway, Mark Fidrich would be on there. And I also looked at I was able to look at, through using the Pitching Streak Finder tool, the longest streaks with 3 or fewer runs allowed through the first 14 starts of a career. And obviously Tanaka is on that list. Some other pitchers to do that since 1920. That's when I dated it back to, since dead ball era just generally produced lower ERA, so I dismissed those. Other pitchers to go 14 straight starts with 3 earned runs or fewer. Josh Outman with Oakland in 08 and 09. The late Darrell Kyle with the Astros in 1991. Andy Hassler in 71 to 74 with the Angels. Ray Corbin from 71 to 72 with the Twins. And Marcelino Lopez from 63 to 65 with the Phillies and the Angels. And there are some starters who are ahead of him that Tanaka can shoot to pass. From 2008-2010, Jaime Garcia, the Cardinals, went 15 straight starts to begin his career with 3 earned runs or fewer. And there's some other names on there, too, that went similar streaks. Joe Hesketh, Bill Stafford, Art Mahaffey, and Waddy Clark. Tom Murphy with the Angels in 1968-69 went 16. And bumping up to 18, you have Dick Lang from 72-74 with the Angels. Steve Rogers, again, as I mentioned before, he went 18 games in a row to start his career with 3 earned runs or fewer with the Expos in 73-74. Dave LeMond from 69-72 with the Cubs and White Sox, he went 18 straight. This one was really impressive to me. Aaron Seeley in 1993-94, he went 21 straight starts with the Red Sox to begin his career with 3 earned runs or fewer. And then the top one was Gary Peters. He went 25 games in a row, almost the entire 63 season with the White Sox, 3 earned runs or fewer. But obviously, 63 was a big pitching season, so that probably wouldn't have been weighted very highly with the ERA plus. But still, very impressive, 1.60 ERA. So, long story short is we can't give an exact answer for how he compares to his other starters' first 14 starts, but he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's up there.
Next question. Again, also from Yankees 199. Where would you rank Tanaka in the MLB starting pitcher hierarchy? Top 20, 15, 10, top 5, or even better?
That's tough.
I think I would put him definitely in the top 10 in the game right now, and I think I would even put him top 5.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends. It depends on whether you believe that this is his talent level, like, for the future. If he regresses, then I'd say top 10. If this is him, and this is who we're going to get for the next, you know, however many years, then top 5. But I would need 2 years of data to make that decision, really.
I think as of now, yeah. I can say, I would say the only pitchers I would want instead of Tanaka to start a must-win game would be, I don't know, Kershaw. I have a lot of faith
Kershaw and Felix.
Maybe Felix.
No, if we're going right now, yeah, top 5. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I know Fangraphs likes Felix a lot, but Felix has also given up like no homers this year, and that's going to change. So
yeah, that's true.
I guess if you go, you have to include some of Felix's track record. So yeah, Felix, you would have to have over Tanaka. Verlander's kind of fallen off a cliff, so maybe not him. Chris Sale would be pretty close. I know he had the injury, but he's been ridiculous this year. I think his WHIP is like 0.8 or something like that. Other than Kershaw, Felix, and Sale, I don't know if there are any other pitchers that I would over Tanaka right now, because Verlander's struggling.
Maybe Darvish,
and maybe Scherzer should be in that mix too, since I don't think he's as bad as, not that he's pitched, I don't think he's pitched badly in 2014, but I don't think he's better than he's pitched. I don't know, I think I would still trust Tanaka over him though. I mean, again, we're running on like a really high Tanaka level right now. So,
yeah.
The short answer is top 10 for sure, and possibly even top 5. I would say top 5. Okay. And his last question, how would you DFA Soriano? Would you throw him in a rocket to the moon, vaporizer by sharks with a frickin' laser, or tell him someone threw a pitch out of the stadium and watch him chase it?
I'd say throw him in a rocket to the moon with sharks with lasers on it and tell him there's a pitch out of the universe and watch him chase it.
There you go. All three answers on
it. I would like to see one of those, like, old-timey stage shows where they take the cane out and just, like, yank him off.
That would also be good. Or, Soriano is just out playing the outfield and it's, like, 2 outs in the 9th. And then, I don't even know, David Justice and Shane Spencer come out from the dugouts and give him a hug and bring him in.
This is an intervention.
Yeah.
Please, Alfonso, come with us.
It's okay. It's okay. Ease his pain. Okay. Next question from Goose. Why has Brett Gardner forgotten how to steal bases? I don't know if he's forgotten how to steal bases. I mean,
he is like 9th in the AL.
Yeah. Maybe he's being selective, but he's also only been caught once this year. So, and he would have had a base stolen on Thursday night, except Jeter swung at the pitch. So, that would have been a steal. Because Jeter did swing at the pitch, and he would have hit into a double play, but Gardner was already on second base. So. But it is kind of funny, since Gardner's been hot lately, but he hasn't really been stealing either. Maybe he's just...
Yeah.
I don't know. But I don't think he has, like, a huge problem, though. He's been better than he has been in years past. By years past, I actually just mean 2013.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because in 2010-11, he stole 49 bases in each year, I think, and 2012 obviously was the injured year, and then last year he was hesitant, but he seems to be going more often this year than last, so.
Yeah.
I still have faith in him and his oven mitt.
steal bases and take cookies out of the oven.
Yes. And last question from Michael Brown. The Yankees whooped the Jays pretty good, pretty well. Do you still consider them the Yankees' chief AL East competition? I don't really know if we can say anyone is like the chief AL East competition right now. I mean, obviously the Jays have a target strapped to them since they're in first place, but it's anyone's division right now. Except the Rays. It's not the Rays division. But it's anyone else's division.
No.
Yeah. And it's like kind of the Red Sox. Not really, but they're not completely out of it.
Yeah, they're hovering around there. I think the Red Sox are going to stay around. 6.5 games isn't that far out of it.
No. But teams that lose 10 in a row generally aren't that good.
Right.
Yep.
And as long as the Orioles still have Cruz and Davis slugging ridiculous bombs, then they'll be fine. They'll hang in there. I don't think I could name a chief opponent right now. It's just too tight. Okay, so that'll do it for the tweet bag this week. So now we'll move on to the last segment of the podcast, the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. So, Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
Brett Gardner.
What a surprise.
Yeah, he has been really good this week. A couple home runs. Yeah, that's for you, Greg.
Yeah, Greg would be... I'm sure if Greg was still on the podcast, he would definitely have picked Gardner. He also probably would have picked Gardner for every week of the season, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, Gardner's been pretty terrific. He had the four-hit game the other day, and he was pretty solid tonight as well. All right, Matt P., your Yankee of the Week.
Tanaka.
Tanaka continues his streak, because of course he does.
The old standby.
Because strikeouts and... winning the baseball games
and not caring about performance.
Yeah,
he's just like whatever. All right, my Yankee of the Week, I'm gonna give it to David Phelps because he's been pretty solid. He had a great start against the best team in baseball, the A's, and then he followed that up on Thursday night with a fine start against the Blue Jays. Went 7 innings again. Actually went 6 2/3 last time, but still, 7 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. So, he's pitched very well over the past week, and I think that deserves recognition. So, you get the Yankee of the Week. Your gift card is in the mail for something. And I think give a bit of an honorable mention to some of the bullpen, Dellen, Robertson, yep. Warren, they've all been great in the past week.
Yep.
Jeter was even hot for a few games there. He's cooled off a little bit, but he had that. All right. Now, the Mitre of the Week. Matt F., go.
Well, Vidal Nuno for a lot of reasons, but I have the FanDraft stats for the last 7 days open. Mm-hmm. And according to this, his home run per fly ball ratio is 100%.
Oh my god.
So, yeah.
Good work. Get off my
team. That's hilarious.
Yeah, whoever's removing Alfonso Soriano from the game needs to also just grab Nuno on your way out.
Yeah.
All right, Matt P., you are Mitre of the Week.
Mine is Yonhervis Solarte, unfortunately, because he's been so bad this past couple of weeks.
Has he gotten a hit in the past week? I don't think he has.
No, he hasn't. He was 0-for-20, like in 20 plate appearances, and he had a negative 74 WRC+.
That's not how you baseball.
No, it's not.
I hope that this free fall doesn't just continue, because that would just ruin all the fun we've had.
Yeah.
I want to look up how long his hitless streak is. His last hit was in Kansas City.
Oh man.
He went hitless in Seattle and Oakland. He is 0-for-21 couple walks in there, but yeah, not great.
And it was ridiculous because like he tore it up in Kansas City.
Yeah, and then he's like, yeah. Bye.
Yeah, I think one of us gave him Yankee of the Week, I want to say.
Yeah.
Might have been me.
Maybe the fans that were booing Robinson Cano gave him his curse. Old PSA meme is old.
Royals fan jets on the Skype call, boos Cano.
Exactly. Boo! Country breakfast! My meat tree of the week. Yeah, okay. My meat tree of the week is going to go to Brian Roberts. Because he's still around for some reason.
Has he gotten a meat tree every week?
He might have. I think there was like. He was hot for like 1 or 2 weeks there, and he might have even gotten a Yankee of the Week in there.
I think there was 1 week I considered it.
But yeah, he's hit 154 over the past week, and just looked very ugly while doing so. And yeah, I would like to see either Jose Perella or Rob Refsnyder. So yeah, please leave.
Yep.
Again. Yeah. While you're walking out the field with Soriano and Nuno, just grab Brian Roberts as well. The Yankees definitely do need some guy with a giant cane like you suggested, Matt F. So just be like,
That comes out from the little like garage area in left field.
Or comes out from the tarp, brings them under.
Yeah.
No, the Humbler has it. It rolls out. Rolls out with a cane, be like, "You're coming with me, Nuno."
I just picture it singing that song that the frog sings in the Looney Tunes.
The "Hello, my baby, hello, my honey." Yeah,
that one.
Yeah. Oh man, visuals. Okay, well, I think that'll do it for the Pinstripe Valley podcast. Unless either of you have anything else.
I'll add one thing.
Okay.
While you guys were looking up the interesting stuff about Tanaka on player reference, I was playing around with it doing less important things. So, do you guys know who is the Joe DiMaggio of hit by pitches? Who is the longest hit by pitch streak?
I would guess Craig Biggio.
It's recent. No, a little bit more recent than that. It was Carlos Quinton, who was hit in six straight games in 2008.
I've heard about that.
That is thoroughly unsurprising. Shin-Soo Choo would have been another good guess.
I don't see him on here.
Well,
but
I think like last year he got hit by 20 pitches or something ridiculous like that.
Actually, Chase Utley this season has been hit by four straight games.
Yeah, last year Shin-Soo Choo was hit 26 times.
Oh.
It led the league easily. He's already leading the AL with 10 hit by pitches.
Right, well, there was an old-timey player named Huey Jennings, who I remember I had I don't even know when it was from, but it was like a baseball card of him fairly recently. I remember it because he was born in my hometown, and he led the league in hit-by-pitches in five straight seasons. So he was hit 51 times.
Oh my God.
Well, he was a target.
287 times his career.
Wow.
That's kind of hurt.
Well, I know. I think Craig Biggio has the record for most hit by pitches. Unless Huey Jennings had more, and maybe that just didn't count 19th century. Don Baylor was drilled by a lot of pitchers, too.
On BRF, when the little number isn't like little gold, is that all-time record?
Yes.
Yeah, then it's Huey Jennings.
How many did he have?
287.
Oh, man. Biggio was only two off.
Why didn't SportsCenter break into that?
I don't know.
End of his career.
He should have extended his career another season just to try to break the hit-by-pitch record. He's just like, come on, you know you want to drill me.
He stands directly on the plate.
So he was hit 285 times, and in 1997 he was hit 34 times.
Oh, man.
Oh, that is some great stuff. All right. Well, that'll do it for us on the Pinstripe Alley podcast. Again, follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. You can follow our gifts account at PSA_gifts. You can follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. You can follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MPro6294. You can like us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. And please rate and review us on iTunes. It's always good to get some feedback on the podcast, and it'll help boost our notoriety on iTunes. So if you ever have time, just leave a small review, leave a rating. That'd be really great. And I think that'll do it for us. Anything else?
Nope, I think I'm good.
Nope.
Go Yankees, go baseball?
Yes.
As always.
Yep. Go Yankees, go baseball. Have a good night.